You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thank you for joining us today. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. We begin our program with the aftermath of the killing of conservative political commenter Charlie Kirk at Utah Valley University. Class is now back in session, but questions over our nation's future persist, with millions wondering how we can avoid more political violence. Well, in an effort to discuss where we go from here, I'm joined by two Utah lawmakers today, Representative Doug Welton from the Payson area and Democrat Kathleen Reavy from the Cottonwood Heights area. Thank you both for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
I just want your initial thoughts. I mean, we haven't talked since the killing of Charlie Kirk a little over a week ago. Just give me your initial thoughts from each of your perspectives on how what's happened since then.
So what's happened since? I mean, it was hard. For those of you who don't know, I teach high school as a full-time job. I had students who were actually at the event. I had students, former students, who were there, and I've had a chance to talk to them. And it was hard, and to see some of them come back in just the next day back in school, and it was exhausting. And my heart broke for Charlie Kirk, and my heart broke for America. Like, it really caused me concern about the direction that we're going in, and the aftermath of the Charlie Kirk killing is what I'm really concerned about, is like how we come together as Americans and Utahns, and how do we move forward from here. I think that's important.
Yes, Senator Reavy, talk to me about how you felt after it.
Yeah, I can agree with Representative Welton. You know, when you think about what's happening right now in America and how divisive we are and how we're so quickly to the other side, it's really scary. And to think that you can't go to a space and not feel safe is also really concerning. I have great concern for our ability to protest peacefully and to have that dialogue peacefully. And I think that's really what's at stake here, having peaceful conversations and coming to understand the other side a little bit better.
And I want to point out that we are agreeing right now on two different things. So that is great. We are all agreeing. So take me inside the legislature a little bit. What's the conversations been like in each of your caucuses about where we go from here? I mean, do the Republicans want to honor him in some way, or are the Democrats just saying we'll follow their lead? What's going on?
Sure. I haven't heard anything specifically from our caucus on specific plans. I've heard some scuttlebutt, and there's some petitions out there to rename UVU to Charlie Kirk University, or rename University Parkway to Charlie Kirk University, or to have a statue.
Okay,
or
I'm gonna have to push you on that. Who is calling to change the name of UVU?
I've got a couple of emails from just individuals. I don't know if they're my constituents or if they're just out in the general public.
Is there any legs to that in the legislature?
To change university? No.
Yeah, I was going to say, I got to push you on things that I see are news. Okay, sorry, continue.
No. So there's that discussion right there. I think there's a lot of discussion on how we move forward. I think Speaker Schultz put out a really good statement today on the importance of coming together. Governor Cox talked about how we didn't riot in the face of tragedy and turn things over. And what I've seen a lot is there's been a lot of dialogue and inward looking, and I think that's the goal, as to how do we move forward productively from this tragedy to make sure that we have meaningful conversations, and that we can do the hard work in Utah without resorting to political violence.
Senator Reavy, some might call this the Utah way, right? This is the way we disagree better in this state. It's kind of one of our quirks, if you will. But from your side of the aisle, are you seeing that on a national scale, or do you think Utah's doing it differently?
When I think about the conversation of renaming parts of our campuses, I always ask people to push pause. You know, when we start thinking about making knee-jerk reactions to events that happen in our world, it's not good. I think we should be thoughtful. We should really look to see the long-term effects. I mean, as we start to think about doing these things, what's the next person? What's the next tragedy? And how frequently can we start turning this big ship? So I always want people to move thoughtfully, think carefully about what you're asking us to do. I struggle as a minority leader in a supermajority state. And when I speak out about some of the things that happen in the state, it's always every supermajority, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican state, really struggles to see the other side. They're really bent on moving a certain agenda. And I don't think that helps us anywhere. So as one of the leaders in the minority caucus, we are always trying to pump the brakes a little bit and you know, I can't disagree with some of the sentiments about what had happened, but let's just be cautious and let's think about what we're actually doing and what would be the next step if we started down this path. So the Utah way doesn't always work in our favor, but we are willing to be a part of that conversation.
Let me get your perspective on something one of your colleagues, Senator Dan McKay, is trying to do, which he is raising money privately at this point to put a memorial on Utah Valley University campus, memorializing Charlie Kirk. Do you guys think that is appropriate? What if the university doesn't want it? Do you support this idea? How do you feel about it?
When we think about education, we're supposed to be non-political. We're supposed to have political conversations, but we're not supposed to tilt our hand either way. I don't believe that this would help that move in the right direction. I think politics is pretty much entrenched in education right now, and we really should be moving to roll that back and have a more open dialogue, be a little less open with our cards. Both Representative Welton and myself are teachers, and I work really hard, and I know Representative Welton works really hard to make sure that we are fair-minded when we're in our classrooms and we're talking to our constituents. While we're with kids, we are always trying to take down the temperature so that kids can actually see the other side and come together. And unfortunately, sometimes when we have a dialogue, we get quoted as being part of that conversation instead of just being a facilitator of the conversation or near the conversation. So I think politics needs to start coming out of the campuses and out of the universities and out of our schools and having a dialogue about politics, which is very different.
Representative Welton, do you like the idea?
You know, a privately funded statue memorial to go on the campus, I don't have a big problem with that. In fact, I think this is a monumental occasion that has happened in Utah that's not a common thing that happens, and hopefully it never happens again. And so I think there's some value to it. To remember, to never forget, we use that phrase with 9/11. Obviously, this isn't the same scale, but for Utahns, this is a big thing. Like this hits us all pretty heavy and pretty hard, regardless of which side of the political aisle you're on. So, I don't push back against that as hard. Where if people really want that and they push for that and they think there's a place for that, I think that's a better approach than like a state named.
Well, to that point, would you be opposed if Senator McKay went and asked for money from the state appropriation to help place this memorial? Catching you on the spot. This is just a hypothetical policy, but
that's a good question. Yeah. I would tend to prefer something that is focused on, like, having a debate series where maybe you don't necessarily honor him, but you talk about, like, let's have open dialogue and let's push that dialogue forward. Something along those lines, if we're going to do it institutionalized. I think there's an interesting question where you draw the line. Clearly, there is not everybody agrees with the sentiment that was put forth by Charlie. But I think the common thing that we can all get behind is freedom of speech and First Amendment rights and the need to engage in difficult ideas and difficult topics.
To that end, Senator Reby, your side of the aisle is sort of getting blamed here. I mean, correct me if you don't see it that way, but the Democrats, the left, is sort of being blamed in this shooting. What's your message with that?
That's really hard to hear that conversation. I don't think anyone in my caucus is calling for violence or for unrest. I think all of us together are trying to find ways to take down the rhetoric. And this pointing fingers doesn't help. And social media has not helped at all. I took a break from social media for a while, and I got back on. I'm like, wow, I forgot, you know?
About how vitriolic this was.
Yeah, it is. And so, and it's so biased when you go from one platform to the next. And so understanding that you're in a bubble when you're on social media and seeing it really is something that you should internalize. And so I don't know how to stop that by doing stuff like this and saying, like, we're here to listen, we're here to take it down a notch, we're here to try to mend fences. And I don't see anything that we have done as a body that would perpetuate this kind of violence at all. So it's hurtful, and it saddens me to think that anybody would think we had any hand in this at all.
Representative Welton, in our final 30 seconds here, just how do you want to have the country do this, talk more, have conversations, see a Democrat as a human? What's
sure.
your message?
Well, one of the things that I'm trying to work on right now is I'm putting together, and I've talked to our House Minority Leader, and the majority is putting together a bipartisan day of service. I think that we inherently know each other, and when you know each other, it's easier to see somebody as a human being. I teach debate and current issues, and I tell the kids sometimes, it's like, you're going to come here with your best friend and find out that they've got a different opinion, but you still treat them well, even when you disagree, because you know them as a person. And I think one of the things that we can do to help with this is we need to be out in our communities, we need to talk to one another, we need to not throw zingers online that are rally your troops, but don't really move a meaningful dialogue forward. And we need to get better at that as politicians, as supporters of politicians, community members. I mean, we see it on social media pages for municipalities as well when somebody doesn't like something. And so realize that the other person's a person. Go outside, talk to your neighbor, have those real connections.
We're going to have to leave it there. Representative Doug Welton of the Payson area and Senator Kathleen Rebe from Cottonwood Heights, thank you so much for your perspectives today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, still ahead here on Inside Utah Politics, state lawmakers are on the clock to redraw congressional maps. Our panel weighs in on the process and what they'd like to see in the wake of the Supreme Court's ruling. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome back. The Utah legislature is all out of options in the legal battle over gerrymandering to pause those new maps a court ordered them to draw. Recently, the state Supreme Court threw out their latest order, pushing lawmakers again to draw those new maps. And now they're on deadline to publish and approve replacements. So to discuss what's next, I'm joined by our Inside Utah Politics panel, Leah Murray, professor at Weber State University, and Aaron Ryder, a former GOP candidate and attorney here. Ladies, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
It is good to be with you. Okay, so also this week we learned that we have a committee of lawmakers who are going to be drawing these maps. And then we also know the timeline. So starting Monday and then Wednesday, we'll have some public meetings from this redistricting committee. So, Leah, let me start with you. There are 8 Republicans and 2 Democrats on this committee. Explain why, because for people who are hearing that might think that's out of whack.
No, I think, to be fair, legislatures generally proportionally have their committees match what the chamber looks like. So I just assume that the legislature's got an 8-2 Republican to Democrat ratio. So you're doing an 8-2 Republican to Democrat ratio in any committees you've got going on.
So it's proportional, is what you're saying, to how the legislature is made up. Yeah. Okay, Aaron, talk to me about what you want to see from these maps. We know that the legislature has really hammered this pizza pie idea, which is currently what we're sitting on. The issue right now is we're divided in Mill Creek 4 ways. It's like Utah's 4 corners, right? So explain to me why you like that idea or if you don't like that idea.
Well, the problem with redistricting is that no matter what, there's no way around the fact that somebody somewhere has to make a decision for how to split the state into 4 equal pieces. There's just no way around that. And so at its core, you have to make a decision as to how are we going to do this? What are the principles that we care about in terms of representation? How do we make sure that everybody in the state has an equal voice in Congress or has representation in Congress? Now, the big dichotomy in the state is that you have this huge concentration of people along the Wasatch Front, and then you have rural Utah, which is the rest of the state, right? I don't know how you equally cut the state into 4 pieces without touching the Wasatch Front in some meaningful way. So the pizza pie idea is kind of the idea that, well, we don't want the rural folks in rural Utah to be completely drowned out in Congress. So we're going to have urban and rural representation in each district, and that way everybody has access to their representative and those voices can be taken back to Washington. Is it the most effective strategy? I don't know. But it is a strategy. It's a legitimate strategy for how to split up the state into 4 pieces.
Well, before I go to Leah and her perspective on how she wants to see the maps, I want to push you a little bit on why. Why is that the best strategy in your mind, or at least what the legislature's arguing too?
Yeah, well, like I said, I don't know that it is the best strategy. It is a strategy. And I think in a lot of ways, actually, it has worked pretty well. You know, you look at our representatives, and yes, a lot of them right now do come from the Wasatch Front, but that has not always been the case. And we have, you know, Congressman Chris Stewart, who, you know, he worked hard to make sure that rural voices were represented in the 2nd District. Celeste Molloy has continued that. She does not live along the Wasatch Front, and so she's able to bring those rural voices in. But she does make an effort to still be here in Salt Lake County. And I think you see John Curtis did the same thing, right? He lived in Utah County, but he made a very concerted effort as a member, as a representative of the 3rd District, to be out in the entire district and built a lot of relationships in the process. So, you know, I think it has worked. You need a representative who's willing to do that, but that's kind of the point of representation, that is that your representatives have to do the job to be there and to be active. And I think for the most part, our representatives have tried to do that.
Leah, what do you want to see from these maps?
So with all due respect, I think our representatives do a really good job, but if the vast, how do I say, the people that you are running for and the constituents you are trying to get to vote for you live all in the same area of the state, then I will just use an example that I've used when we've had this conversation before, Lindsay. Every conversation about water is about the Great Salt Lake. Anyone who doesn't live near the Great Salt Lake, that's actually not an issue for them. So I kind of flippantly said, no one talks about Lake Powell, right? And the answer is right. Because when Celeste Molloy is doing the work that she is doing, she is bound to pay attention to the interest of Salt Lake City in this area, which is hours north of where people who live near Lake Powell are, a little bit I would like districts. And I think Aaron's totally right. To a certain extent, our population density lends itself that you've got to be thoughtful of 80% of us, I think, live along this Wasatch Corridor. But you could do it differently in such a way that doesn't make every conversation has to be about something that people in Salt Lake City care about.
Can I actually just push back on Leah here?
Please,
for a second.
Go for it.
When I was running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District in 2022, so many of those conversations were not about Salt Lake County. And when you talk about something like water, and you talk about water rights in St. George, you talk about water in southern Utah, you talk about Jordan River Compact, like all of these different things, there are lots and lots of discussions that are happening on the federal level that are not necessarily centered in Salt Lake County. And that's what our federal representatives should be doing, right? They should be looking at federal issues that deal with the entirety of their district. Now, there's a lot of discussion in Utah about the Great Salt Lake, but I think that actually comes more from the legislature than it does from the federal representatives. In my time running for Congress, way more of those conversations were about the issues that actually affected the entire district. I mean, we talked about federal land in Salt Lake County just as much as we were talking about federal land in Washington County. And, you know, again, like John Curtis spent a lot of time talking about federal land in the 3rd District and how to address that to meet the needs of the people who lived there. So I don't know that that's a true statement. Like, I think that there are a lot of issues that our federal representatives deal with that don't see the spotlight that actually do represent a lot of the district.
All right, so let's roll it down to where I think I'm not lying, right? But yeah, I think your point's taken. Then let's talk about the state legislature. So this entire conversation about redistricting is just about the congressional maps. And I think I've said to you before, if it is the case it's an issue of how the legislature did it, why are we not having a conversation about the legislative districts where absolutely
fair.
The leadership in the legislature is overwhelmingly along the Wasatch Front. So the reason why we have a year of water and all the water's about the Great Salt Lake is because we have districts that disproportionately make the Wasatch Front more important than the rest of the state. So maybe I'm wrong about Congress. I'm not sure I am, but let's just go that Aaron's right there. I'm pretty sure I'm right with the way that we drew the districts in the legislature does harm to our rural voters.
Well, and that's an interesting point, right? The way the legislature and the legislative districts are drawn is different than the congressional maps. The congressional maps, you have 4 seats. That's it. And you've got to figure out how to split Utah into 4. But at the legislative level, you have a lot more than 4 seats, right? Both in the House and in the Senate. How you split those up and how you separate those out and where the leadership comes from across the Wasatch Front. Now, the Speaker of the House, he's not Wasatch Front, at least as far
he's
as...
He's rural, yeah.
He's rural, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we
from
actually...
Hooper.
I mean, yeah, like, we do have members of the leadership that are not Wasatch Front. But, yes, a lot of the issues... Now, to some extent, though, my pushback is, I don't know how you get away from that. I mean, rural issues are certainly important to the state and will continue to be so as we grow. But... again, to your point of if we have roughly 80% of the population living in the Wasatch Front, a lot of our business industry is here. There's a lot of stuff happening in the Wasatch Front. You're never going to get away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my thought is most of the conversation is about partisan gerrymandering. And what I'm trying to introduce the idea is it's not just about how can we dilute the power of the Democrats or inflate the power of the Democrats. The conversation is about how are we affecting the political power of our rural voters in this state.
We are going to have to leave it there. Leah Murray from Weber State and Aaron Ryder, former GOP candidate here in Utah. Appreciate you ladies both for that discussion right there. I love just sitting back and being like, you two go at it. It's fine. When we come back, I want to introduce you to Erin in another capacity. She just took over a brand new office in the state. She is the ombudsman of the HOA office. We're going to talk to her specifically about her new job coming up.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, welcome back. Utah has a new organization to be the liaison between state lawmakers and homeowners associations statewide on important issues. And the face of that agency is a familiar face here on IUP. Aaron Ryder is one of our Inside Utah Politics panelists. Aaron, hi.
Hi. It's so great to be with you,
Long
Lindsay.
Time no see.
I know.
It's good to be with you. Okay, so I like to call you the czar of HOA offices, but tell us what the office does, why it was created.
Yeah, so the legislature created the office earlier this year in the legislative session. Really, there are three main goals for this. The first is we oversee the HOA registry. So every HOA in the state of Utah has to register with the Department of Commerce. We're changing that registry, so all HOAs are going to have to renew that registration, and then they're going to have to redo that every year on an annual basis. So that's the first component, is that registry. The second is we can issue advisory opinions. So if someone feels like there has been a violation of state law in their association, that could be a homeowner or an HOA board member who feels like there's been a violation of state law, they can bring it to us, we'll look at it, and we can issue an advisory opinion that clarifies the law. And then the third component is we're here to provide education and resources for the public. We know that living in communities can be complicated sometimes. There's a lot to know and a lot to do. And so our job is to be here to provide trainings and resources for the public.
Okay, interesting. So give us some of the biggest, like, what to know and what not to know if you're an HOA, you know, board member or homeowner, yeah, right, who's signing into an HOA. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so if you live in an HOA, the important thing to remember is that your HOA is governed by the governing documents of the association. So if you are on a board, then your job is to adhere to those governing documents.
Sort of like a constitution, if you will.
Sort of like a constitution, that's right.
Right.
You want to think about it kind of like a corporate entity, and a lot of them are actually corporate entities. You are a member of that corporate entity, and so there are rules around how the organization functions. The really important thing that people need to know when they buy into these communities is that you're not just buying a house, you're buying an entire community. So before you buy into an HOA, you want to make sure you've done your due diligence on that community. What are their reserves? How much money do they have in the bank? Are there any special assessments coming up? What are you actually purchasing? Are you purchasing the entire lot, or are you just purchasing the area where the house sits? All of those kinds of questions you want to ask before you go into that purchase, because once you get there, that community actually has a lot of say over how you can live once you're in the home.
And before we wrap up, I just kind of want to know, what is the biggest, like, issue right now that you see HOA or homeowners facing with HOAs? What are they coming to you and saying, can you please resolve this?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue that we're seeing so far is that people just don't know what their rights and responsibilities are. So a lot of our opinions, that's the point, is to clarify that. And that's what a lot of our education and training is hopefully going to do.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, is there anything else? Where can people find you if they're in an HOA now? They're watching this and they're like, I need to register. I need to make sure that my, you know, HOA is signed up with the state.
Yeah. So if you want to find us, you can come to our website, hoa.utah.gov, or you can also email us at hoaoffice@utah.gov. Reach out anytime. We're happy to answer any phone calls and emails and help you out.
Love that. Is there anything else the public needs to know about this office?
No, we are here to be a neutral resource. We're not choosing good guys or bad guys. No, preconceived notions going into this. We just really want to be here to help.
But you're like the Supreme Court of HOAs. Like, you issue opinions and you decide who's right.
Well, but we are truly neutral.
Right.
Like, you know, we're not assuming that all board members are evil.
Right.
Right. Like, these are volunteers that are trying to do their very best, and we understand that and we recognize that. So our job is to clarify and to help.
Aaron Ryder, appreciate your time today.
Thank you
so much. All right, well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me on social media, on X, Blue Sky, and Threads. Just search for Lindsay on Air. Lindsay spelled with an A, by the way. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz wherever you get your podcasts. Well, that does it for today. Thank you for joining us. We will see you next week.